Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, dozens of people are killed in a bomb attack on a bus station in Abuja, Nigeria, overwhelming the emergency services.
Workers have been mobilized. Even those who are in leave will be called to come and make inputs in this because it was becoming overwhelming.
And in Ghana, the NPP, narrowly defeated at the last election, is setting its sights on 2016.
You have told us that we must work together as a team and that we must deliver power in 2016. Prepare for government. Prepare for power.
Plus, human drama set against a backdrop of nature conservation in When a Tree Falls, the latest installment of our popular series, Learning by Ear.
Top story.
Nigeria is reeling after a bomb attack at a bus station packed with commuters killed dozens of people on the outskirts of the capital Abuja on Monday. More than 100 people were injured. President Goodluck Jonathan visited the scene of the attack, which he blamed on the militant Islamist sect Boko Haram. From Abuja, our correspondent Ben Shemang reports.
Ambulances rushed to and from the Nyanya blast site, taking scores of injured victims to various hospitals in the capital city, Abuja. Nyanya is a densely populated suburb of Abuja, filled with government and civil society workers. And the bomb explosion took place in the early hours of Monday during the rush hours and caught commuters who were resuming work. The suspected terrorists had apparently abandoned an empty vehicle loaded with the bomb, according to Nigeria's National Emergency Management Agency, NEMA. The country's police spokesman, Mr. Frank Mba, said more than 70 people had been killed. He also said that 16 buses, 24 smaller buses, were destroyed in the incident, but sought to assure residents that security has been beefed up. Monday's blast is the deadliest single attack ever to hit Nigeria's Federal Capital Territory.
The security in and around Abuja is being strengthened. We are paying very close attention to all the vulnerable points. We are paying very close attention to motor parks. We're equally advising Nigerians to avoid unnecessary huge crowds.
The Nigerian President Goodluck Jonathan led other security chiefs to the scene where he offered condolences to the families affected. The president was quick to point the finger of blame to Boko Haram militants and vowed to keep fighting the Islamist insurgency.
We'll do our best. Security services.
We will do our best. Our security services will continue to work hard. God willing, we will get over it. The issue of Boko Haram is temporary. Surely we will get over it.
Jonathan, who is expected to face a tough re-election battle next year, has faced tense criticism over the continuing Boko Haram violence. An escalation of attacks in or near Abuja could pile further pressure on the embattled president.
Ben Shemang reporting. Boko Haram has been blamed for the deaths of 1,500 people in Nigeria this year, but most of the violence has affected villages in the remote northeast of the country. Yahayo Shinku is a security analyst and a former major in the Nigerian Armed Forces. Suleiman Babeu from DW's Hausa service asked him why he thought Boko Haram was now carrying out attacks in other parts of Nigeria. For technical reasons, we are reading his answers in the studio.
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I think some of these attacks are politically motivated. They cannot be disassociated with the fact that we are approaching the 2015 elections and there are some people that have some interests. So I think considering the fact that the patterns of the attacks have now changed and also the states where these attacks are being carried out are being increased, for example, it is no longer in the northeast, but also in the northwest and north central part of Nigeria. And by implications, it will be very hard for the Electoral Commission to be able to conduct elections in those places. Even if the electoral chairman will decide that he would still conduct the election, I can assure you that some of his staff will not volunteer, will not sacrifice their lives to go into such areas in the name of conducting elections. So by implications, I think this thing is politically motivated.
It's politically motivated.
Is there anything that government can do in order to eradicate this or to bring this to an end?
Well, the government will have done such.
Well, the government would have done such at the earlier stage when these people placed their demands before the government. And those demands were lawful demands. According to them, they wish that those that killed their people should be brought to justice. That was number one. And the government was adamant on it. Nothing was done. The people that perpetrated all those killings against their people were seen parading themselves on the streets, and nothing happened. And at the end of the day, I don't think that somebody that feels he is a citizen will have a peace of mind to see that somebody has killed his people and he would be allowed to go free, and we will be claiming we have a government. So having the government to allow this thing to escalate this way, I think it will be very difficult for it now to counter it.
Yahaya Shinku talking to Suleiman Babayo from DW's Hausa Service.
Africa Link, because Africa is more than just a headline.
Ghana's new patriotic party, the NPP, which was narrowly defeated by the National Democratic Congress of President John Mahama at the last election in 2012, has begun positioning itself for the next national poll in 2016. The NPP elected a number of new senior officials at the weekend. But as Isaac Kaledzi reports from Accra, the party will have to overcome internal divisions and broaden its appeal if it is to stand a chance of winning the elections in 2 years' time.
The national chairman, and we had four contestants. The first is Jake.
Ghana's Electoral Commission official announcing the results of the national chairman position of the new patriotic party at its delegates' conference. The incoming chairman of the party has a huge task of reorganizing the party for the 2016 elections. Mr. Paul Afoko told his supporters to prepare for power.
You are the owners of the party. Today, I can tell you very confidently that you've made that choice. You've given us your marching orders. You have told us that we must work together as a team and that we must deliver power in 2016. Prepare for government. Prepare for power.
Mr. Paul Afoko, who is from the north of Ghana, must rebrand the party, which is dominated by people from the Akan tribe in Ghana. He also has a huge challenge of uniting the party supporters. Che Mensa Bonso, a leading member of the New Patriotic Party and minority leader in Ghana's lawmaking chamber, summarizes the challenge that confronts the country's largest political party ahead of the 2016 general elections.
The MPP cannot rely on its own strength to win power. We need the support of other neutrals, the non-committed, and the floating voters. The time has come for us to ask ourselves, are we by our conduct making our party attractive? People keep telling some of us, we are tired of and have lost confidence in the NDC. But are you people serious as an alternative government?
But Afoko tells me business won't be as usual again, but rather focus will be on providing alternative policies to that of government and helping to develop the country.
And I can assure you, you've heard me over and over again during my campaign. I have continually said I would rather build bridges to the future, not to the past. The past is gone. Today is the dawn of a new future. I intend to build those new bridges into the future, into power for my party.
This new leadership of the New Patriotic Party must now organize the party's presidential candidate elections to pick a leader for the 2016 elections. The former flag bearer, Nana Akufo-Addo, has declared his intention, likewise his main rival, Alan Tremantin. Mr. Tremantin is certain the NPP will present a viable candidate capable of winning the next election.
I believe that once the newly elected leaders are given the opportunity to settle and put down the timetable for the flag bearership contest, and then I believe that the party members will speak again for change to take us to victory in 2016.
Political analysts say it is too early to tell if all aggrieved members of the party will unite and support the new leaders of the NPP to forge ahead into the 2016 elections. They anticipate the flag bearership slot will decide how ready the NPP is to recapture power.
Isaac Kaledzi reporting. Vote counting is now underway in the West African nation of Guinea-Bissau after Sunday's parliamentary and presidential elections. The hope is that the poll will bring stability to the country after years of coups and political infighting. Election monitors said they expected a record turnout among the country's 800,000 registered voters. Elizabeth Azevedo Harman is a research fellow with the Africa Programme at Chatham House in the UK. I asked her how significant were the reports of a high turnout.
They're very, very significant. It's a message from the people of Guinea-Bissau, not just for the politicians, the militaries, but also to the international community. It's been a growing skepticism about the country. There were security concerns. There were all this fear about the election. People went to the poll station and they did say, we want a change in the system. I think it's really, really important. It's a message for everyone from the common people that they want a different Guinea-Bissau.
What can you tell us about the way in which these elections were conducted? Were they free and fair, as far as one can judge at this stage?
Guinea-Bissau, ironically, never really had substantial problems in the election day in terms of fraud or intimidation. So it is expected, and from the reports that we have been getting from Guinea-Bissau, that the results of the elections were really free and fair, and there was no political parties complaint or any of the candidates. The question now, if it will continue in the announcement of the results, the tricky moment now, it's how the candidates and the supporters of the ones that will lose the election, how they react when the results will be announced.
Now, if no candidate wins an outright majority, there's going to be a runoff. Now, the last time there was a runoff in Guinea-Bissau, which was 2 years ago, the army stormed the presidential palace. Is that likely to happen again?
This time, different from the elections in 2012, international community that has been absent from the country for 2 years, like ECOWAS and African Union, they are now in Guinea-Bissau with a very, very strong diplomatic and political presence. They have a leading African Union, the former president of Mozambique, President Chissano, and the former president of Cape Verde, Mascarenhas Monteiro. And they brought with them a very important VIPs and diplomats and politicians. So we didn't have that in 2012.
But the military has until now been the de facto ruler of the country. Do you see them accepting a fully fledged civilian government?
The government that will come up from these elections, they need to compromise with the militaries. They need to not just announce a reform of the militaries and the security system. And I know that it's very difficult because people want justice. People want to see the militaries that have been responsible for coup d'etats and assassinations in the past being punished. But for any reform to go ahead, it needs to have some compromise with them. And that will be very difficult for the government. They will need all the support from international community in this new phase of Guinea-Bissau.
Elizabeth Azevedo Harman.
Deutsche Welle, learning by ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Welcome to Learning by Ear and episode 9 of our new drama series about deforestation. Set within the dramatic backdrop of civil war, this story reveals how deforestation, the loss of trees and grasslands, has destroyed rural life and created conflict between two farming communities. Now thrown together as refugees in Dovani camp, these people are beginning to find common solutions for the future. Dovani refugee camp leader Talib is upset. He has set an eye on his colleague Chika, but she says they should just be friends. Meanwhile, Mulogo has toned down his rhetoric and admits he has changed.
Working with Chika and Talib in the last few months has made me change my mind about a lot of things. I agree now, deforestation is destroying our environment and our livelihoods. Carbon dioxide is at dangerously high levels, adding to greenhouse gases and causing the climate to change. Trees absorb carbon dioxide, which is why we must stop farmers from slashing and burning forests for land and find alternative ways to live. I have learned a lot from my discussions with Chika, and after the big meeting yesterday, when we agreed on a forest management group, I finally got to talk to her alone, and one thing led to another. What do you think you will do when we all return to our communities?
I don't know. And you?
My father wants me to get a proper education. He thinks I'm full of hot air. I've fought against his traditional ideas for so many years. But I must admit, I have grown to respect him. He's a good leader.
His stove idea was a great success.
Yes, and I would like to develop my interest in science too. Join an agricultural college, learn more about agroforestry, biofuels, you know, stuff like that.
Oh my goodness. You'd be gone for years?
Would you miss me?
Yes. I think I would. We've had great discussions.
Is that all you would miss?
Mulogo.
Why don't you come and study with me?
You really are so sure of yourself.
Chika, I hope you don't mind if I say that, I have noticed a change in you.
Oh, what sort of change?
I don't know. We have worked so closely on so many projects, and now I feel we are moving apart somehow.
But I'm very committed to what we do.
I suppose I'm more worried for myself. I always liked you a lot and hoped we could become more than just colleagues.
Oh, I see. Talib, we're too similar. I've always looked on you as a brother.
Oh, that makes me sound so boring.
No, not at all. I can relax with you and be myself. But, I think attraction is difficult to define.
And you are attracted to Mulogo. Oh, sorry. It is none of my business.
No, it isn't. Look, there's a war on, and one day when it's all over, who knows where our paths will lead.
I'm sorry I mentioned it.
No, Talib. I think it's good to be honest. But let us focus on here and now. Stage 2, mapping our forest and resources. Our communities are going to need these skills to save their forests when they finally return.
And I guess we have to make that sound sexy, sister.
Exactly. Here, give me 5, brother.
Father, I'm leading the next session on forest management. Can I ask you to help me make a map of a Bantu district forest in the sand? Then everyone can have a look at it and comment.
Sure. I'll be happy to do that.
Here's a stick. Can you please draw what you can remember of the forest? Its boundaries, settlements, rivers, roads, paths?
Here you go. And those stones represent villages.
How many hectares, roughly?
The total area is about 100,000 hectares. As chief, I had official documents showing all the different departments in the forest and who owned what.
According to the Help Africa Field Manual, an important first step in forest management is to identify the real owners of the land.
Sure. And when farm is firmly established, they will give us the information.
Come, Dad. Let's finish this map in the sand. Then we will be well informed and ready to run the meeting.
Oh, you are a born leader, my son. I am proud of you.
Akiki, I need to ask Ceci what happened to my brothers, especially to Kato. I get the feeling she knows something.
Isi, why do you want to upset yourself? She's not able to tell you. She can't speak at all.
But a week ago, you said she was getting better.
Yes, when Chief Apalo tells her one of his forest stories.
Are you saying she was struck down by what she saw several months ago?
Yes, she definitely saw terrible things.
But I have one question I want to ask her. Just one. I have to know.
Welcome to FARM, our new forest and rural management meeting. Step 2, forest management. Over to you, Mulogo.
Good afternoon. Let us start by looking at a map of our forest that my father, Chief Apalo, has drawn here in the sand. Please come closer. Take a good look.
I think we should identify the trees we need to protect because of what they give us. Wood, fruit,
nuts, seeds.
How about we discuss ranking these products according to their value? For example, we need medicine, firewood, wild honeybees. They are also a form of revenue.
We can make a chart showing the seasons and the trees and the products. If we lay out our findings in this grid, we can see more clearly which trees must be protected as a priority.
I think the traditional healers must take part. They have long years of experience.
I know my healer could not find any hagenia to cure the tapeworms in my little boy.
Themba, you're right. But some healers are also guilty of stripping the forest bare of medicinal plants. Yes. They must work with us to replenish what they take.
Also, those loggers must come forward. They must work with us to decide which trees to cut and plan how many can be chopped safely. It is not in anyone's interest if the trees are over-harvested or disappear altogether. I see this as a win-win situation.
That is what forestry management is all about.
So I will pass around these grids. Please get into your groups and start filling them out. Add to the map in the sand, and when you are finished, I will draw what I see onto this poster and put it up for us all to see.
I don't see Isingoma here, Makiko.
No, it is not like him to miss a meeting.
I am going now. I will check Sesi and see if Isi is there.
That is very kind, Chief Apalo. You have a very calming influence on the girl. Poor thing. I'm just waiting for the day when she finally finds that tongue of hers.
Isi, my son, what is the matter?
Oh, Chief Apalo, how am I going to tell my mother?
Why? What has happened? Hey, Ceci.
She can't speak. That is the worst of it. But she has told me with her hands that... that Kato is dead.
Oh, dear God. Oh, come here, dear boy. Shh. Come on, come on. Hey, Ceci, my child. Come. Put this blanket around you. Where's Akiki?
Gone with her cow Kiroko to get grass.
Let me go and tell your mother to come here. Isi, go and look for Akiki. Hey, Ceci, stay here. We will all meet back here very soon. Makipko must be told.
Kiroko, I know something else. Only I do. My sister held my hand and placed it there, on her stomach. I know what that means, Kiroko. I could feel it round and warm under my hand. I, and only I know who the father could be.
And that's all from today's Learning by Ear series, If a Tree Falls. If you want to hear the program again or tell friends about it, please visit our website at dw.de/lbe. Goodbye for now.
And before we leave you here on Africa Link, a reminder of our main stories. Dozens of people have been killed in Abuja, Nigeria, in a bomb attack on a bus station blamed on the militant Islamist sect Boko Haram. A high turnout in elections is raising hopes of a stable civilian government in Guinea-Bissau. And Ghana's NPP party, narrowly defeated at the last election, has a new chairman. And there we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. If you've any comments on what you've just heard, then do get in touch. You can send a text message to country code 49 160 957 59510 and email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. And we will, of course, be back again at the same time tomorrow. Do join us if you can. As always, thank you for listening. This is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.